It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with Mae Brussel. For the past 14 years, Mae has been researching and uncovering facts and evidence from between the lines of the news and placing them in a more thorough perspective of how conspiracy, political assassination, and abuses of power affect us all. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KLRB-FM in Carmel, California. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 295, and it's November the 13th, 1977. I have Bob Cutler here with me from Massachusetts, Manchester, Massachusetts, and those of you that have listened to Dialogue Conspiracy over the years have heard him on the program. Bob, you know, I've had people that have listened. It's 6 years now that I've been on.
I think I've only been here five, Mae.
Yes. Well, that's great.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's great that Bob comes out to San Francisco each year and makes a special point of coming down to Carmel, which I really appreciate.
So it's good fun.
Well,
great fun to be here.
Let me tell people about you that are new listeners to the program who don't know Bob Cutler. Bob lives back east. I'll give you his address. He's written books on the assassinations, the first one in 1969, Flight Number, Commission Exhibit 399. Do you want to give a description of that book? That was your first book.
Well, that was the first one, which was a sort of a negative proof, as you might say, a proof that the Warren Commission reports, single bullet theory, wouldn't work. In other words, you have to prove things negatively. It's a very difficult thing to do. But nonetheless, that was the only thing that you could first attack. After that, you go over onto the positive side and try and find out where some of the shots came from.
Yeah, and then you wrote in 1971, Two Flight Paths. Do you want to describe that?
Which is, by looking backwards through the chest of the governor, you find that the bullet flight path would come from about the 10th window on the 6th floor of the school book depository building.
And then in 1973, Bob wrote a book called You, the Jury, regarding Chappaquiddick. That's a great book. Now you have them in print again?
Yes, we've got a second printing that's currently available, which is I think it explains exactly what happened at Chappaquiddick, which is an ambush and an engineered accident.
Wonderful pictures in the book, diagrams, and copies of newspaper articles that are hard to get now for people that want to study it.
Right.
It's really a great book. What are you selling that? What is that costing?
Well, it costs $13.
$13.
Unfortunately, printing has not gone down since 1973.
Well, it's worth it. It's worth it. It's a great book. That box number, if you want to order any of these books from Bob, I'll give it later, is box 1465, Bob Cutler in Manchester, Massachusetts, zip 01944. And you've been working on the George Wallace shooting.
Well, I haven't been working specifically with it, but I'm certainly working with Frank Salant, who is the only one that I know of that's doing any real research into it.
Yeah.
And we're trying to help him, and when he gets his book written, before he gets it written, I think I'll probably make a few drawings to help him out and help him explain how many shots there were in that particular shooting.
I was really upset, but just before we went on the air, Bob told me that Frank had a very serious automobile accident. He's another one of my co-workers or associates that I've known that have had mishaps. I think it's terrible. We won't go into the circumstances, but is he going to be okay?
Yes, he's recovering.
Uh-huh. Then another book in 1975 called Crossfire. Is that much different than Two Flight Paths?
Oh, yes, that's quite different because that goes into the entire firing sequence that happened at Dealey Plaza.
Uh-huh.
The Umbrella Man is...
The Umbrella Man in 1975. What does the Umbrella Man book cost if people want that one?
$10.
$10?
Yeah.
I've said on the air, you know, that I quoted the Torbett document and the statement that they thought, these authors thought that Ferenc Nagy, the premier of Hungary, was
right.
The Umbrella Man. And it's not very often in the course of my 14 years' work that I have to retract or go back and say, no, it isn't that person. I'm lucky because I don't think so far I've had four times, or three even, that I can remember where I had to change my opinion of the circumstances. But Bob has done more work on the Umbrella Man than I have. And he brought a picture tonight. He says it's in Penn Jones' book, but I don't remember seeing it. And says it absolutely isn't Ferenc Nagy at all, that this man is younger and that he knows the name of the person.
At the moment, I'm writing what will be called 66 Seconds in Dealey Plaza, which will deal specifically with the Umbrella Man's specific actions from the time that he was standing waiting for the motorcade, and he raised the umbrella, fired, and then lowered the umbrella, and then finally sat down and talked to the accomplice, who then we know was talking in a radio, small walkie-talkie. We have a town or two shows that very clearly, and we have to credit Jack White with an excellent blow-up of town or two, showing the antenna and showing the accomplice with the radio to his mouth.
Can you describe that weapon that he had? A lot of people don't know that right at Dealey Plaza at the time John Kennedy was killed, two men were staying on the curb, and the accomplice was never mentioned for years, was he?
That's right. But if you look at Willis 5, the picture in Willis 5, you'll find that he's standing and he has something in his hand.
Uh-huh.
We know now that a small black object, it's obviously it's got to be a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, but the weapon, was the first time the weapon came out, the gun as the umbrella, at the church committee hearings when they were investigating the CIA?
Right. September 18th, 1975.
Whose testimony was that? About
Charles Sensenay.
Saying that they had a weapon that was an umbrella that shot for the assassination teams.
They worked it all in with, let's say, dots, pens, pins, canes,
suitcases,
and umbrellas. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he said umbrella, Senator Baker changed the subject.
Oh, off the record. I have the
right
testimony
away
at home, yeah. But
it's beautiful.
That's called change of subject. In the Warren Commission hearings, you get that all the time, where pertinent material comes
that's
up and they change
part
it.
That's part of 66 seconds.
Have you ever written to Baker about that?
About
Senator Baker about that?
No, I'm not going to write anybody. I'm just going to hope to print it and hope somebody will read it.
I hope you get
understand
it. So when John Kennedy came down the street, the umbrella opened and he shot at him.
Right.
Yeah. Which shot was that came out of the umbrella?
The first wounding shot.
In the throat.
Yeah.
The one where he said, below the, probably the voice box, where he said, I've been hit?
Yeah. No, he couldn't say.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is an area here where the critics disagree. If you believe Kellerman, who said he heard John Kennedy say that he was hit, then you believe that must be the second shot.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise he couldn't have talked. But when he was hit in the throat, it hit him in the larynx, and it knocked his voice out, and he never said a thing. And his wife said he never said a thing.
Uh-huh.
Nobody else ever heard him say anything except Kellerman.
Maybe.
So I don't happen to believe Kellerman's testimony.
Well, it could be that the driver, Greer, or somebody let out a word, or one of the guys said he's been hit, and he heard that and thought it was Kennedy.
That's possible. Very possible. But
yeah.
I believe that Kennedy never
could speak.
Said anything. He was hit at 188, which is one of the Z-frames. That's the way that's the way we tell where people are hit if you're going into the details.
Uh-huh.
And that's early on in the assassination.
Uh-huh. Another question about the umbrella man that I wanted to tie in with that news this week about the killing of William Sullivan is that on Dialogue Conspiracy many times I've mentioned the Torbett document that was written and the Permandex, the links of the Permandex organization to the Kennedy assassination. And throughout that entire document, which also speaks about the Umbrella Man at length, they
right.
talk about William Sullivan of Division 5 of the FBI
right.
as being the connecting link of the FBI to the CIA and the political assassination, to the Defense Industry Security Command. How much do you put into the Torbett document, before we go into William Sullivan, who was murdered this week, how much credence do you put into that document as it exists?
As it exists, you have to. I always feel that it's certainly an extraordinary piece of work, being written at about 1969, probably, and it was never really published, but it was. All the researchers had it by 1970. And the fact that he was able to pinpoint so many things that since then have become really, I mean, they've become facts that we all tend to agree with. The only one I don't agree with is the pinpointing of the Umbrella Man as Ferenc Nagy.
Yeah.
Nagy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's pronunciation.
But outside of that, don't you think that there's a lot of credibility in that?
Tremendous credibility.
I think
it's a shame that he won't allow it to be published. I mean, I don't know that anybody will publish it.
Well, I wrote to Mr. Copeland, the attorney, and asked for permission to duplicate it.
Yeah.
And we're doing it.
Yeah,
getting them out. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
If people want to order, they write to me, and I haven't even spoken on KGO.
It.
And yeah, we're getting it out because What'll happen? The worst they can do is sue, and then we'll know who they represent.
That's right.
If they're in hiding and using an alias, we wouldn't know.
Where does the suit come from? That'd be very interesting.
If people want the Torbett documents, they can write to me, and the bookstore in Capitola is getting them out.
Really?
Yes, Aries? I'm getting them out.
Good.
Yeah. But in that document, it goes at length into William Sullivan, and this week in our newspapers, the number three man in the FBI, of course, across the country, was in the newspapers. William Sullivan was killed, and I've mentioned his name as being this link, but if you notice on the San Francisco Chronicle, it was on page 44. Mm-hmm. It was in back over by the sports section. An accident kills the ex-top FBI agent, J. Edgar Hoover. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you've kept up with this. They said it was a hunting accident, 243 feet from these FBI head with a high-powered rifle. Maybe you'd like some comments on this.
With a scope.
What do you think happened here? Just a clear-cut murder?
Well, let's take the first thing that you're interested. The first thing that struck me anyway was when they write 243 feet in relation to a gun firing. You know perfectly well that very few people in relation to a high-powered rifle talk in terms of feet. They talk in terms of yards. Okay, so you've got 243 feet. You're very smart. You can divide by three, and you come out at 81. It so happens that the four wounding shots in Dealey Plaza range from 26 through 50 through 71 through 97, and this is only 81 yards. All those shots in Dealey Plaza would be considered point-blank range. There's
point
no
blank.
Question about it.
Here's
so 81's got to be in the area that most people with a high-powered rifle with a scope would say this is point-blank range. What the hell are we doing with a scope at point-blank range?
But do you think that one of the most important men in the FBI in the entire United States would be out alone before dark and mistaken by a deer, by the son of a policeman?
Theoretically, you should be wearing a red hat in the first place. And there are very few deers that I know of, anyway, I haven't seen them wearing. I'm not a deer hunter. I've got to talk to... There's a very nice fellow who is a good researcher in Texas who is away this weekend deer hunting, and I can't wait to call him up on... tomorrow morning.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Very sure.
He wrote that book on the assassination.
Sure.
Well, there's another article I cut out of the Los Angeles Times, page 8, and the article about William Sullivan is 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs, just sentences. A little tiny thing which measures like 5 inches of newspaper column at the most.
Sure.
All it says is ex-Hoover aide killed by Hunter at the time of Watergate, just in 1972, in May, William Sullivan had taken from the desk of J. Edgar Hoover all of the dirty files, the information which had to do with counterintelligence, and the heaviest files that they were afraid that J. Edgar Hoover could use for blackmail. Mm. And he put them in the desk of John Ehrlichman, and that was 1 month prior to when Hoover was killed. I believe he was murdered. And his desk was cleaned out by William Sullivan, and Sullivan had been doing all the work, the dirty work of counterintelligence for the FBI, and I think it's outrageous that he was killed this week. Another article, the same day that he was killed, on page 3, it says the FBI cut back its domestic intelligence. So the one way to cut it back is to get rid of the boss, you know. But how important do you think William Sullivan is to this whole story?
He was in retirement, of course. He was living in Sugar Hill, New Hampshire. And the question of why, I just... can't understand why they would go to such a blatantly ridiculous, obvious way of getting rid of somebody. It seems to me that
the
opposition has to be more intelligent than that.
But
I just can't believe it.
At the height of Watergate, Congressman Mills all of a sudden had $25,000 that was siphoned through this secret money through Robert Haldeman's desk, and he was found dead outside of his barn at 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
in Oakland, William Nolan, who had worked, he had published the story of Patty Hearst kidnapping, and Randolph Hearst had told him not to put it in the paper, and they had been competitors, and Nolan had worked with the Intelligence Committee for a long time, the China Lobby and Richard Nixon. He was found at 7 in the morning, dead out by his barn. It was so obvious. They found these 20-gauge shotguns and no suicide notes, these men were. So this isn't much different.
It isn't new.
No.
It certainly isn't different, but I can't see why, if you're going to really sit down and plan to get rid of somebody, that you couldn't do it a little more Well, a little more subtly, I mean.
Well, some go out car windows and some are in car crashes, but I think it's like a message, like with The Godfather, when you put a dead horse's head in the bed, there are other ways to scare a person, you know? You could just shoot at his leg or arms or something. I think the people around them get the message.
Yeah.
I think it means more to the people he works with and who have his papers than we know.
I think it certainly was the message that they gave Teddy Kennedy when they killed Mary Jo Kopechne.
Just to keep quiet.
Same thing.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. Another thing, when I went to Boston, you helped set up that conference in 1975. Everyone was about, I called for their Arrested Development, the conspiracy conference. They were at the grassy knoll. And I was trying to talk about Gary Powers and George de Morenschild and William Sullivan. My primary witnesses are all dead. A lot of the others are, too, but
the
they're all
the one I spoke of had already died.
The one you spoke of already died.
I talked on Chappaquiddick that day.
The Chappaquiddick story, yeah. That's right. Do you think that Ted Kennedy drove the car?
No, he wasn't in it.
No way?
No, he was ambushed and taken aside. They were taken apart. In other words, Mary Jo was taken from him. He was taken from the car, actually, and they kept Mary Jo in the car.
And then she went down.
She went down.
Yeah. I want to ask you another question, which is always important to me. Are the people doing research being too heavily infiltrated to ever get the truth out? Is there too much counter-discrediting, counter-intelligence, hogging the show, certain people, you know, keeping themselves in the limelight for us to ever get the total truth out? Do you think we'll get it out in our lifetime?
I think it's all going to depend on it. I think the best chance we have is right now. I mean, within the next 6 months, probably. If by the spring, the House Select Committee on Assassinations is holding public hearings, and we've got the TV and the radio and the news are actually taking what is said and putting it the way they should and broadcasting it properly.
Yeah.
Then I think we have a pretty good chance.
But they did it at Nuremberg, and they did it at Watergate, and they cover up, I read today or this week, that Judge John Sirica is asking for the CIA files on the John Kennedy assassination.
I heard that on the tube before I came out.
I don't understand
what that means.
That means that the CIA doesn't want to turn their material over to the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And if he reads it and says, no, national security depends upon the committee not having it.
He's the censor, in other words?
He's the censor. He and Leon Jaworski that covered up, Leon Jaworski covered up Nuremberg, he covered up Watergate, now he's with the Korea Gate. If they see it and say, no, it's too sensitive, they become the deciding factor, such as Lee Harvey Oswald's income tax records. We can't see it. They have it. You know, what if Sirica says, no, I've seen it and you can't have it?
Mm.
That's the cutoff.
Well, it seems to me that there's enough, maybe it's the wrong kind of evidence, but we've certainly got enough of other kind of evidence so that they can't stop the evidence that I think that the researchers have, seems to me.
You don't think
that's
so?
My problem.
Well, I don't know. I was down in L.A. last
my
week.
My way of looking at it, anyway.
Yeah, I was with Mort Saul, who, you know, has been in this for a long time. He's very sincere and dedicated, and we both agreed it isn't a question of the evidence. We've had enough evidence to show a conspiracy. How many years have you been at this? I've been at
10. Yeah, I'm a Johnny come lately.
Oh yeah, I've been at 14. Comes this November.
Almost 11. The end of the 11. At end of November, I'll be 11.
Okay, I mean,
I'm just a kid.
Was there ever lack of evidence to open this up, even say from the first year that you got into it?
No, of course not.
So the evidence has always been there.
Yes, but can you produce it, and will anybody listen to you? Can anybody then use that? That's the important thing, I think, isn't it?
The major media is hell-bent on destroying our credibility even now.
Right.
The CBS had a show this week with Murray Kempner, and somebody he got on early in the morning and said people who do this research are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Post puts out these kind of articles. The talk shows in New York City, Candy Jones, has a show that's 5 hours on the air and goes all over the country. And she'll put on Michael Eddowes with his book, or Priscilla Johnson, and she'll never have the other side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Snyder has these people on, Eddowes and Priscilla, and every Frank Sturgis and Jack Anderson, they continuously say overt lies. Jack Anderson this week was saying the communists were behind Marita Lorenz.
Yeah.
You see, okay, how can you break...
Russian and Cuban. Great conspiracy.
Even though he was in jail for being a pathological liar, sabotaging the elections, he is credible. New York Post articles...
They'll give him plenty of space.
All the space he needs. How can we break the major media complex that continuously barrages?
It seems to me that Bernstein's done pretty well. Carl Bernstein's article in Rolling Stone. I haven't read it yet, but the thrust of it is that everybody in the top level, top echelons of the CIA is the CIA, top echelons of the media.
Well, I read the article and I outlined every word of it. And what I got out of it was that Bernstein says the top level of CIA were news media people, that Time used to be CIA, that New York Times had CIA, that Alsop was CIA. You could even say Buckley was CIA, Hunt was CIA. But they don't, the thing is that he got $30,000 to write that. It doesn't admit that one is today. And then he admits that he has the name of 400 people today. And he also knows, because he's been interviewed by people, he knows that Cronkite is, or Dan Rather. And when they asked him about the 400 people, he says, well, my purpose isn't to name names, but to tell you what happened in the past during the Cold War.
I see.
So, you know,
so it has no continuity up till today.
None at all. So Woodward, I mean, from Navy Intelligence, didn't he write about Watergate without mentioning Howard Hughes or Chappaquiddick or the Wallace shooting or the J. Edgar Hoover death?
They never mentioned Chappaquiddick and they never mentioned Wallace. The two things they stayed away from Watergate.
Okay, now you've gone into those as much as Dealey Plaza. I mean, you know the Chappaquiddick story. I know it. I've got your book. I've got the other books on it. I've studied the Wallace shooting. How can the major media ignore this constantly? It's more current than Dealey Plaza.
Yeah. Those are the two big things of the 72 campaign.
That's right.
The biggest.
But how can we break...
Dirtiest tricks.
How can we break this out? How do you get to the people?
I don't know. This is a problem. I've not, as you know, I've been concentrating on making sure that I know the basic firing sequence in Dealey Plaza. And it's only within the last... maybe a year or so that I've been thinking about trying to even photo interpretation or photo identification of something, of somebody who might have been involved in this firing sequence. Now, from there, that's the lowest echelon. Now, the next step is to try and get that person and keep climbing up the ladder until you get to the top.
And get you,
But that's a long, hard... I agree it's a long, hard road.
Bob was just back in Texas and went to the Texas School Book Depository. That must have been interesting.
I've been
in the front of it. I've never
been
in it.
I got in one time and Mr. Truly stopped me, the manager.
Is he still there?
Well, he wasn't there that day because it's all shut down. We had a man by the name of Mr. Lewis was the one that let us in, and then we were there for an hour.
So you went to the roof?
Right away.
And you're convinced no shot ever came from the roof?
No shot. The parapet's too high. And the interesting thing is that I never thought of it. I should have thought of it. But the sign on the top is completely, the structure of the sign takes up a tremendous amount of the roof. And it's
the Hertz sign?
The Hertz sign. And it has a lot of horizontal braces all over the place. So if you were firing from the roof, which is very difficult over the parapet because it's 16 inches wide and it's 72 inches at one end and 52 inches at the other. So you know you're leaning in a very awkward position. Your feet would have to be way off the ground.
Probably seen.
Oh, yes.
How about the fifth floor? Do you think any shots came from the fifth floor?
And the real problem is that to get down and get through the structure and get into the little tiny hole that you've got to go down these rotten stairs would take you forever. It would, no assassin, no hired hitman would say, this is a good escape route.
From a roof.
Absolutely.
Seventh floor roof.
Absolutely not.
Okay, how about the fifth floor?
Not on the fifth. I think the sixth floor.
Sixth floor?
I think the sixth floor is where they did it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think you can get in the elevator... I still think you can get into the elevator on the fifth floor, although the Warren Commission exhibit shows there is no opening at the fifth floor. I'm convinced there has to be some kind of an access opening that could get you to the cab in an emergency.
Okay, do you believe Oswald was downstairs having a Coke?
Yes, absolutely.
And the gunmen were on the sixth floor?
Sixth floor. Yep. Of course, there was somebody on the seventh floor of the Dow Techs.
If somebody were impersonating Oswald... at that window on the sixth floor to make sure that the story, you know, that was his little nudge. Why didn't they get themselves more visible instead of just leaving Brennan as a witness?
Well, I don't think Brennan saw everything. Anything you look at Brennan look at Brennan in the Zapruder film, and he's watching all the way around. He follows the limousine all the way around. He doesn't look up at the building.
He's
sitting on the wall, and you see him follow the limousine with his eyes. His head turns right towards the camera.
He's not even looking up there.
No.
Yeah.
Never has been. That's as late as, 183, I think it is, when he finally... No, if he looked up after that, Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
But the indication is very clear that he's looking after the limousine as it turns the corner right in front of him like everybody else was.
You've done 10 years' work now, and I've done 14. Have you liked doing the work, this estimation research?
Sure. Well, I like making drawings. I mean, that's...
Yeah, Bob's an architect.
That's my...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of young people listening that I've encouraged to go into journalism or political science, you know, and I'm getting sort of a generation here. It's been six years. Some new ones coming and some that have gone on that I've met at universities where I've lectured, and that has made me feel good that at least to raise the level of awareness.
Oh, yes. I think it's very important. Well, anybody that goes to any of the schools, anywhere, I've lectured just recently in a couple of secondary schools, shall we say, and it's very rewarding to find who stays afterwards and what they talk to you about, and they're very knowledgeable. They're very interested. That's the most... I was amazed. I mean, here are kids that are... Kids, I say, 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in that area, and a lot of them knew an awful lot about this.
I know.
And could ask the most intelligent questions, much more intelligent sometimes than the older...
Fantastic. Yeah. I was up in Sacramento this week for Veterans Day, Sacramento State University. The questions and the level of awareness of people is really growing. You know, they are understanding it. Let me just give your address one more time in case people want to get these books, because they are hard to get.
Very. They're running out.
Yeah,
however, there's a new one coming out. It should be out in December, end of this month.
Yeah, well, you can write to Bob Cutler. Give your address again.
Box 1465, 1465, in Manchester, Mass. And the zip is 01944. That's not hard to remember. 01944 is very easy.
Okay. If you know the number. Okay, now we got a couple of minutes. I want to ask you, in all of your research, each of us has done different areas that we've specialized in. You know, like I've done a lot with the White Russian community, and Lee Oswald is the agent, you know, and I've left the mathematics to you, man, because I read all the material, but I can't remember, as much the frames as all the precise details of his Russian exploits or Mexican or in the Marines and so forth in Mexico. What is the most important piece of evidence that you have to give the committee in Washington or the students that you think proves beyond any doubt that there was a conspiracy?
That's a hard question. Of course, I believe the Umbrella Man shows. That's the most important thing as far as I'm concerned, but very few people agree with me. I think Dick Sprague agrees with me and a couple of others. But the most important thing I think I could find is that the shot that went through the governor's chest did not come from window number one. It came from window number 14, when you finally get the Powell One, which is the Army intelligence officer that was standing out on the corner of Houston and Elm, took a picture of the building about 5 or 6 seconds after, maybe 10 seconds after the final shot. And it shows window 14 open. And that's where we were. We were at window 14, and we posed a fella standing with a piece of board we picked up. We posed him as the assassin.
I think the direction of those shots through John Kennedy's back and into John Connolly's back and chest and the arm and leg, and that planted bullet is one of the hardest pieces of evidence, in addition to the Zapruder film, of the impossibility, and then having the clothes dry, cleaned, and destroyed, and the car interior destroyed, and the street signs removed. I think that was always one of the very first starting points of research.
Actually, the throat wound is the most important thing.
The
fact
wound.
That the throat wound is above the collar line and below the Adam's apple.
Uh-huh.
And it says so. And every one of the commissioners that was sitting in there with Alan Dulles, when Dr. Carrico said so, that is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Has been covered up.
Always.
For
I have the document of Malcolm Perry saying, without a doubt, it was a throat entry wound. Entry wound.
No question.
Yeah. Well, listen, the half hour goes fast.
It does, doesn't it?
I want to thank you for coming all the way out here from Massachusetts.
Thank you for having me, mate. It's always a pleasure.
Really great. We get together about once a year, and it's good to see people. I've made friends with people like you that I've known a long time now.
Right.
Who I call them the soldiers. If you read about the Lincoln Brigade in Spain, the Americans that went over there to try to stop Franco, you know, and might have averted World War II if they had gone there. And I look at ourselves like you're a soldier, I'm a soldier in this particular army to avert things that are happening. So I feel we're both on the same team and working hard for the same. So if
certainly you want, have been for a long time.
We have. So if you want any books of Bob Cutler's or get in touch with me, if you've missed the zip or whatever, get in touch with me, and I can forward the information to you.
Certainly.
And I hope you all save your money. Maybe that's a good gift to get for the holidays. Save your pennies and dollars and get this pack of books and become informed. Okay, I think that's it for this week on Dialogue Conspiracy. This is May, and I'll see you next week, and take care until then.
You've been listening to Dialogue Conspiracy with May Brussels.